Blog Talk Radio. Hello, and thank you for joining me for another episode of the Growing Up Chaotic Show, the show that provides a 360-degree view on all topics related to addiction, recovery, domestic violence, and mental illness. I'm your host, Dawn Clancy, and I'm excited to be here. On February 22, 2013, Henry Mayberry lost his brother, Tom Mayberry, to alcoholism. Although Henry was ultimately destroyed and devastated by his brother's passing, he decided to use the heartbreaking experience to raise awareness about alcohol abuse. So what did he do? He picked up his guitar and he used his songwriting and singing talents to create a tribute video for his brother Tom that has received more than 1 million views on YouTube. And I believe that when he initially put the video on YouTube, it actually took just a little over a week to reach the 1 million mark, which is amazing. He blew up YouTube, or as they say. Today, Henry is here with us to talk about losing his brother to alcoholism, his music, and his mission to raise global awareness about the dangers and heartbreak of alcohol abuse and addiction. So let's welcome Henry. Thanks for being with us today, Henry.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing well. Okay, so we're going to get to the YouTube video in a little bit, because it's quite amazing that you had over a million views in a little over a week. But first, I want to talk to you, or have you talk to us, about your brother Tom and kind of what led up to his unfortunate passing.
So basically, it all started in his late teens, but we didn't actually recognize it, that he had a problem, till his early 20s. You just start to see a drink more regular in his hand, and from there it just went downhill. It was just heartbreaking as a younger brother to be looking up to your big brother, someone who you idolize, someone you look up to see rot away like that. It was just heartbreaking.
Did you notice, as his younger brother, and you go into this on your website, is somebody that you looked up to? You know, he could be your critic at times, but then at times he could be encouraging. He really, inspired you to go for your dreams and to stick with things. What was it like for you as your brother got more involved with alcoholism? What was that like for you? Did you notice him pulling away from you, or what was that like?
Yeah, well, you start to see a change, don't you? You see a completely different, he was always such an amazing guy. Like, I would relish in those times that he was, sober. Yes, there weren't many times that he was. I'd relish in those opportunities, and he was always the life and soul of the party, and he was just so incredibly supportive with my music. There was actually one occasion where Mum was with Tom in the car, and I recorded this little demo at school, and when I was about 15, singing I Dreamed a Dream from Les Miserables. Mm-hmm. She put it on, and he was there like, is that Henry? Oh, fair enough. He's pretty good, isn't he? Really kind of typical older brother. And he was always so supportive. But, once again, as times got, worse, and he got towards his late 20s and things were getting seriously bad, he did distance himself from it. I mean, don't get me wrong, there would be times where I would have to do that thing, give them tough love. I remember going to a rehabilitation centre for families where that you would go along as a family, and you would sort of sit there and they'd say, look, have you got someone suffering from, addiction in your family? This is how we can help. So myself and my mum went along and they said, give them tough love. And I tried doing that. But when he's texting you, I'd managed to do it for about 6 months, ignore him and stuff like that. And but there'd be times on a Saturday night when he was watching Match of the Day, which is some football over in the UK, and football program, and he'd be texting me and saying, oh, you know, mate, you're watching the football and stuff like that. And, you know, I do miss those times massively. But, yeah, it was just, I suppose he would avoid talking about any problem that he had, you know, to do with the addiction and stuff. And it was just heartbreaking, as I say, to see someone so close to me suffer for so long.
You say that you would try the tough love approach, and, you know, the 6 months would go by and you wouldn't speak to him or, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah.
What did you find most frustrating about that? Because I find, you know, even in my own experience, is that you want to help this person, you really truly do, but
yeah,
it's just something that you can't even really put into words to someone who hasn't experienced it. You don't, you know, you want to be there, but at the same time, you've got to have these boundaries and that tough love. So what was most frustrating for you?
Well, the word frustration is, you know, I can't, you know, I use that all the time, because I used to look at someone who used to be a David Beckham lookalike when he was in his late teens, and he had so much going for him, and then it just all went downhill. And when we went to this rehabilitation center, myself and mum, to go and ask for help, how we sort of deal with it as a family, they said the word tough love. And basically, I'm not going to go lie, it was incredibly tough. It was really hard. But, you know, they say that that person needs to crawl themselves to a rehab, not just simply go, yeah, okay, I'll go into rehab. Because, you know, that's another thing that I find really annoying about rehabilitation centers, is that it's not like you sign a contract to go in for 6 months. You can walk out at any point if you want to.
Right.
That's the problem. And I remember when I went to rehabilitation center in Kenwood Trust, I went there to go and visit and talk to some of the people and stuff there, and they said, you know, those guys that you just spoke to, they've only been here for about a week, 2 weeks. And he said to me, the guy who was giving me sort of a tour around and meeting some of the people in there, he sort of said to me, he said, probably about one or two of them will be here in about 3-4 weeks, because the other 6 or 7 would have walked.
Right.
And so obviously it was incredibly hard. You know, Tom needed to go there. He needed to have actually crawled himself to rehab. We did try to, on one occasion, we got him in the car and we drove him to this rehab, and he just flipped, just got out of the car and just said, I can't do it. And we were like, Tom, no, it's all right. You can do it. Come on. You can do it. Don't worry. We're here for you, et cetera, et cetera. But he just flipped and just walked. Just literally in the middle of nowhere, just walked. He would just walk to the local pub. Even if it took him about 3-4 hours, he would just walk. Because, and obviously, as I say, it's, you know, it's soul destroying to obviously see that, because you think, oh, we were so close. And, you know, there's amazing people out there who managed to do it.
Yeah, the frustration that you talked about when you see this person that you love who has so much potential, and you see them just, you see it just basically leaving their bodies because they're so caught up in this other world, it can be so frustrating. So what happened the day that you found out that he had passed? Was it like a particularly rough week before that, or was it kind of a surprise?
So I'm not gonna lie, I was expecting it for about a year. You know, I was there, like, you know, we tried everything, and I was just there, like, thinking, you know, a year before he passed, I was there, like, thinking to myself, like, I don't think he's going to last much longer. I don't think he's going to make 30, and which is horrible. And just before, about 3 or 4 weeks before, I just performed at the O2 in London, and I suddenly go back to uni to do my end of second year at uni, which I've studied music, and I go back, and I was there for about a week, and I get a phone call from my mum saying, you need to come home now. And, you know, I would answer the phone, I was just like, well, no, I said, why do I have to come back? I said, no, we're giving him tough love, that's what we've been told to do. and I was being really stubborn. And then I remember just lying in bed that night and barely slept, and I thought, I've got to get back, I've got to get on the train. Next day I booked train tickets and I jumped on the train. I literally thought, I've got to. And I got back and jumped into the car. We drove to the hospital, and in the car I was, you know, being a typical 20-year-old. I was putting my point across, didn't listen, you know, saying, I'm giving them tough love. Stormed up to the ward, walked down the corridor, into the isolation room, opened the door, and suddenly everything changed. I'm not going to lie, it felt like someone had ripped out my heart and stamped on it. Because I went in, and I wasn't just looking at my brother who was suffering from, you know, being an alcoholic and stuff like that. He was lying there, and he was lime green. And I was just there like, oh my God. I couldn't even say anything. I literally just remember looking for what felt like 2 hours. I was there for about 10 seconds. I closed the door, walked out, and I was just thinking, oh my God, what's happened? How I saw him 2 months ago, less than that. I saw him in, you know, during over Christmas. It was like a month and a half ago. And I was thinking, what's happened? And it was just heartbreaking. I can't explain that when you see someone who's on their, as it were, last legs, as it were, it was just horrible. And I remember the day, actually, when, you know, we were then there for, what, a couple of weeks, 10 days, something like that, before then he passed. And I remember I was actually right beside him, writing a poem, which I eventually read at his funeral. And I just remember a doctor coming in and saying, Mrs. Mabry, can I talk to you, please? And I was just sat next to Tom. Mm-hmm. And there's just something, when you hear the tone of someone's voice, I was just there like, oh, this isn't good. This is not good. So I insisted that I went with Mum, and he took us into this empty room, sat us down and said the words that, I'm not even going to say what he said, but it said the words that no one ever wants to hear. It was just horrible. But like you said, there was so much going for him. There was, you know, he had his whole life in front of him, 29 years old. He didn't even reach 30. That is, in today's society, well, actually, even back, you know, 40, 50 years, that is incredibly young. It's, you know, I remember after he passed away, I was just like, not only for the whole family, but, for the whole family, it was incredibly hard. But I just felt life was completely unfair. And I was just kind of like, I'm going to do something about this. I don't care if it bloody kills me. I'm doing something about this. And I was, you know, I'm not going to lie, I was incredibly hot-headed, and I was up in my room one night and jamming on the guitar and stuff and writing a couple of songs, and I was looking through my songbook, and I thought, God, he really did have a massive influence on my life, didn't he? You know, I was there, like, reflecting and stuff, and I came across the song Lost Days, which actually used to be called Where Have You Gone? But I think it's the Lost Days. And I just came across it, and I said, I've got to do something about this. Called up my best mate, and I said, I want to shoot a video to help raise awareness about alcohol addiction. And just from there, as I said, then 6 months later, then released it, and within an hour, we had about 600 shares or something on Facebook. People were just sharing it. And I wasn't expecting, you know, the reaction that it went and got and stuff, and suddenly 4 months later, I was opening the largest conference for addiction in Europe, in London, and I was thinking, obviously this is the path, you know, I'm going to do something about this, I'm going to, and I'm not giving up, because people forget that, you know, it's such a big part of our culture nowadays, alcohol, it really is, it rolls off the tongue. You know, I always say this when I go into schools and I'm, you know, showing the music video, and I say, look guys, you know, I tell them my story, and then I say to them, I say, look, it, you need to be aware about the potential dangers of alcohol addiction and alcohol abuse. It can lead on to addiction because we forget that it's such a big part of our society and it rolls off our tongue. We say, if a mate goes off on holiday, we'll say, mate, when you're back in 2 weeks, we'll go for a pint, yeah? Oh, mate, I'll tell you what, after work, do you want to go for a pint? Oh, mate, after the rugby game on Saturday, if we played a couple of, you know, in the tournament or whatever, do you want to go for a couple of pints afterwards? We forget about that. And it is so easily, it can easily become a part of our lives.
Absolutely. It can slide like right under the radar. And then there's this weird line of, does this person have a problem? Do I have a problem? Mm-hmm. Or am I just, you know, in my 20s and having a good time and this will pass? And I think it's you had mentioned that you go into schools with your video and your music and your mission and you talk to kids. Do you find that they're responsive? Do you find that they get information that they didn't necessarily have before? What has the response been?
Yeah, it's been incredible. Without, you know, blowing my own trumpet, it has been incredible. Just the fact that these kids have been sort of, because I'm only a couple of years older than some of them. That's the thing, right, as well. You know, I go in and I think, you know, I'm not going in at 40, 50-year-old, you know, at 40, at 50, going, don't drink. You know, I'm going in and opening up to them. And, you know, I'm going in and kind of they see me and they're not really threatened by me because I'm only a couple of years older than some of them. And they come up to me afterwards. And also, that's the other reason why, you know, I used to be the kid when it came to PSHE days and stuff like that, when people used to come in and talk about alcohol and drugs and stuff. And I used to be the kid at the back of the class thinking, oh, it's my day off. Oh, I'll mess about.
Right.
You know, have a laugh with the guys and stuff. I used to do that because someone would be standing up and just saying, just talking for about an hour and a half. They would be. Whereas I'm going in and saying, right, guys, I'm going to talk for 10, 15 minutes. And then what I'm going to do is show you a YouTube music video, which hopefully in 3.5 minutes will show you about potential dangers. Because I'm not saying if, you know, and the response has just been incredible. Like, the guys all come up to me afterwards and they go, God, it makes you think. And that's all I want. And it does, you know, people are saying to me, oh, it makes you think. And on one occasion, I was at a school recently, and this young girl came up to me afterwards, and she came up to me and opened up and sort of, she was shaking, and I was like, she said, oh, I really appreciate you coming in and doing this today. And, you know, I absolutely loved it. And she was about, I think she was about 15 years old. And she came up to me and she said, oh, I have to tell you, my boyfriend took his own life. And I went, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Mm. She said it was about a year ago. And she said he was suffering from alcohol addiction and stuff. And I said, God, how old was he? And she said, oh, he's 17.
Oh my God.
A couple of years older. And I was like, oh my God, wow. I said, I'm so sorry to hear that. And she said, I wish he had met you. And I suddenly just went, whoa. I was just like, wow. I said, look, I said, you have had massive courage to come up here and tell me that. And I said, you should be incredibly proud of yourself. And I said, I'm so sorry to hear your story. And I wish there was something I could do. You know, I wish there was. And she then went, and she was a really lovely girl. And the teacher, he was there, and he came over and he said, you should be really proud of yourself. Because he said, I have to tell you, I've been teaching her for at least a couple of years now. And I said, I didn't even know that. She has opened up to you, and you've only been in her class for an hour. And it's happened on numerous occasions. You know, it's not just schools that I've been going into. I've been going into prisons as well. And I went into a prison recently, and a couple of months ago, and I'm looking to booking more prisons over the summer. And the reason why I think, you know, that was just an incredible experience as well, going into a Category B prison, you know, going in. And I was, you know, before I went in, I was quite nervous. I was thinking, oh, God, you know, they're going to be thinking, who was this middle class, you know, guy standing up telling us, you know, about this? I then performed the song, and I was thinking, this is going to be interesting to see the reaction, actually. And I left that place speechless. absolutely speechless, because they came up to me and they were just, I can't believe, you know, how bad of me to think that. I can't believe that I gained their respect. But I was thinking, I've actually helped in some way. These guys, they went away and said, oh no, cheers mate, thank you for coming in, because it's so different having someone come in, you know, young and stuff like that, coming in, you're doing your music and stuff and sharing that with us. But he said also, it's good for me to hear that I'm not just talking to another recovery addict, I'm actually listening to someone who's young, who was part of the family, whose family suffered, seeing their sibling or, you know, son or whatever, suffering from it. It's coming from a completely different perspective. And they said, you know, they were there saying, like, oh, you know, it's really made me think about what I'm doing to my family and stuff like that. Like, thank you so much. Like, you know, and they were saying, some of them saying, like, oh, when I get out of here, you know, I'm going to be listening to that song and stuff. It's going to help me and stuff. And I was just there, like, thinking, God, I can't believe how powerful just going up for a few minutes, performing a song and stuff, you know, and sharing my story can really be. And that's why I'm so passionate about this. And that's why I want to help as much as possible, and I will continue to do so. But yeah, it's just been an amazing journey so far.
Yeah, I mean, clearly your music and your message is helping people. And an interesting part of this is your song, Lost Days, that you had written for your brother Tom. You've decided that every time someone purchases a song, you take that money and you donate it, because you've actually, in addition to all these other things that you're doing, you've created a campaign to help. Well, tell us about the campaign that you've created.
Yeah, to put it really simply, I want to raise as much money as possible for addiction charities globally via the sale of my debut single, Lost Days. The song obviously was written for my brother, Tom. And, you know, I've written it to show, you know, people what it can have, the impact it can have, the impact addiction can have on the family. So that, like, the idea is that I'll raise money with the song and put the money into a charitable trust, Lost Days Charitable Trust, which is led by a committee of leaders from the addiction field, one being actually Professor John Kelly, who's the first professor of addiction at Harvard University. So, and you know, it's so far, it's only been going for about 3-4 months, but we've raised a couple of grand, and it's, you know, fantastic. It's, you know, it's obviously the whole idea of the committee is that, you know, I'm learning all, you know, on the way and stuff, and having the money, you know, whatever money we raise, having the committee, they will decide where the money goes, because obviously they know where it will make a difference. You know, Professor John Kelly, he's worked in addiction for years and years and years. Obviously I'm new to this kind of thing, and you know, I'm learning on the way. This is, you know, a journey for me. I'm learning stuff every day, and whatever money we raise, they will decide where it'll go, because they'll know where it'll make a difference. And you know, it's not, you know, what I'm doing to help raise awareness as well. I said I'm traveling around schools, going into schools all over the UK, as well as I've been to Holland as well. I'm going into schools where basically it's kind of like a get up and talk, show the music video, and then do a quick Q&A with the kids afterwards, as well as perform the song Lost Days acoustically. And the response, as I said, it's been incredible. Suddenly having celebrities help with the cause as well in the UK, you know, they've been tweeting about it and to all their hundreds of thousands of followers and on Twitter, which obviously helps massively with getting the message out there and helping raise awareness. My dream is to, I remember Deirdre Boyd, she's on the committee as well, and she's worked in the addiction field for years and years and years. And I remember when she called me to say, when I released the video, she said, I'd like you to come and open the largest conference for addiction. in Europe. It was in Europe, and so I went down to London. I remember her saying to me, "I believe that your video could save people's lives." Mm. And I was just there, like, thinking, wow. I was like, you know, I remember when she called me and said this, I remember breaking down in tears after I, you know, finished the phone call. I was just like, I wasn't expecting that. Like,
right.
So my dream is to have this video one day, hopefully, to have it in the 12 steps of alcohol, 12 steps of recovery, sorry. Because, you know, I honestly believe that it could help people hugely. I just really do. And it has so far. And, you know, my dream for one day is to have it in the 12 steps of recovery and helping people recover from alcohol addiction.
Wow. Well, we're coming towards the end, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to just give one piece of advice to someone like yourself. Maybe it's a sibling of someone right now that's struggling with addiction, alcoholism, and they're going through the same exact things that you went through, you know, trying to get through to your brother, the tough love. What's one piece of advice that you could give to that person to, you know, to help them through it, to help them understand? What would you tell, what do you wish you would have known back then?
It's incredibly difficult, I'm not going to lie, to sort of say, look, what can you do? I'm not going to, you know, sit here sort of waving the finger saying, you should do this, you should do that, because it's different for everyone. It is. But mm-hmm. I think just trying to talk about it, like, obviously we tried that with Tom, but sometimes you can't do anything. That was the thing with Tom, like, they need to literally crawl themselves 10, 20 miles. Literally, if they wanted to save their lives, they would crawl themselves to a rehab. And they do need to do that. But I think the only advice I can give is just try talking about it. Try and make them really listen. Just try and get it through to them that, you know, you're dying. And if you don't go and get help, you are in serious trouble. Because look what happened to my brother. He didn't mm-hmm. even make 30. He didn't even make 30. And don't get me wrong, we did everything. We tried everything. And sometimes you get, like, a freak incident, like Frank Skinner, who is a famous comedian here in the UK, and he suffered from flu. He'd been an addict, alcohol addict, for a number of years, and one day had flu. And he suddenly thought, he woke up one morning and was, oh, I can't drink, I'm too ill. And then he woke up the next day and said, oh, I can't drink, I'm too ill. Then he woke up the next day and he's feeling a little bit better. And he said, God, I've gone 2 days without a drink. That's the first time in about 13, 14 years. And he was like, I wonder if I can do it for another day. Mm. And then he kept going and he managed to do it. And he hasn't touched a drink for 18 years or something ridiculous. He hasn't. And sometimes you do get instances like that, which is just amazing. You know, I give full credit to Frank Skinner. Like, what an incredible man to be able to do that. But I think anyone who's going through the same problem and has it in the family is try and talk about it. I used to hide it when I was at school. No one ever knew it about me because I thought, actually, I was there, like, worried about what people, you know, think of me if I suddenly, you know, bring it up and stuff. And I had a kid who came up to me after one school and said, oh, I mean, when you said that, it really touched me because no one actually knows about my problem. And it annoys me because I should have been able to talk about it while I was at school. I should have been, because it was something that I was going through while I was at home. I used to come into school and, you know, do that phrase, smile and wave, and try and, mm-hmm. you know, get through a day. And I should have been able to go and talk about it. I should have been. What's wrong? Yeah, my brother's had an alcohol addiction. what is so wrong with that? At the end of the day, I should have been able to do it, and I think that people should be able to talk about it. And I think that's what we need to do in society, is actually think, you know, yeah, we need to start talking about this problem and actually start trying, you know, trying to do something about it. You know, it's so easy to walk into a supermarket and get a 90p cider or something like that. Mm. How ridiculous is that?
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong, Tom eventually got banned from some of the supermarkets and stuff. But then how...
Wow.
You know, you come out of a rehab and probably, you know, I don't know exactly, but I'm guessing probably pretty much every rehab probably in the world, within probably 5 mile radius, you've probably got an off license or somewhere that sells booze.
Mm.
And it's so easy to get your hands on it. And it just annoys me. So yeah, there we go. Before I go off on another one. But it's, you know, it's obviously something that I'm incredibly passionate about, and you know, I think that, you know, it's something that I'm gonna continue to try and get the message out there and try and educate the next generation about these, you know, potential dangers, because if I can help in any way, I bloody will. And I'm sorry, yeah, if I can't say that word on the radio.
Oh, you can say it.
Sometimes, yeah, sometimes I just think, you know what, I don't care. I will. I'm just so passionate about this, and I will help in some way.
Wow. So speaking about your mission, where can people find your music? Where can they get more information about you?
So, well, they can go to henrymabry.com or go onto Facebook, and I've got a Facebook page called Henry Mabry, Twitter, Henry Mabry, Instagram, Henry Mabry. So just literally just go, the best thing to do is to go to my website if you want to, you know, keep up to date with everything. But I always say to people, if you, the thing that I post regular stuff on is and sort of, you know, if you want to follow my journey, is my Facebook page, which is Henry Mabry. And you know, if anyone wants to talk to me or anything, just, you know, get in contact with me through Twitter, Facebook, and it would be, yeah, be, you know, be great to, you know, I always look to help in some way, so please get in touch.
Yeah, wow. Well, thank you, Henry, for being here today and just sharing so openly about your story and your passion. I mean, truly, you've taken a really awful situation and you're turning it into something positive with the help that you're offering to people. And it's refreshing to talk to you. And of course, I wish you loads of luck, and I'm, you know, keep churning out the music, and you have videos on your website, and it's just amazing. So thank you for being with us today.
No, thank you so much for getting me involved. I mean, it's, you know, it's all for such great cause and stuff. And, you know, I've got to thank you guys for giving me this opportunity to try and get my message out there as well. So honestly, I can't thank you enough.
Absolutely.
Help and stuff. Thank you.
All right, you take care.
Brilliant. Okay, cheers. Bye.
Bye. Wow. So refreshing to speak to someone who's just so incredibly passionate about getting the message out there and using a personal situation such as losing a sibling to alcoholism and just taking it and trying to do something good with it. And clearly Henry's music is reaching people, and he speaks out at schools and at prisons even. It's just incredibly refreshing. So for more information on Henry, his music, the fundraising he does, you can go to henrymabry.com. And there's also a link for that on the show page here. But yeah, it's just so nice to be able to connect with someone who also has dealt with a sibling who struggles with addiction, because we definitely need to be talking about that so much more than we already do. So for more information on Growing Up Chaotic, you can visit the blog at growingupchaotic.com, and we can also connect on Facebook at facebook.com/growingupchaotic and on Twitter at Growing Up Chaotic. And again, for Twitter, that's spelled GRWNGUP CHAOTIC. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Henry Mayberry for making this show possible. Until next time.